Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
WGN, Mark Carbon with you. Appreciate you being a part of the conversation today as we bring in Rabbi David Wolpe, who is out on the West Coast. And I'll be honest, I did not know about Rabbi David at Sinai Temple before today. I was going through Instagram and seeing what Stephen Jackson was doing after what he had learned after his comments. And I saw that he had connected with the rabbi that we have on the line right now. And so I'm really interested in hearing what you have to say, Rabbi Wolpe. First of all, like, what was your reaction when you saw the comments from DeSean Jackson and saw it doubled down by Stephen Jackson? And then now here's a gentleman reaching out to you to get some information, be in the conversation, which is a great thing. But I'm curious, like, what was your initial reaction?
So, first of all, I grew up in Philadelphia. So I've been a lifelong Eagles fan, even though I've lived in Los Angeles now for some 30 years. And when I saw that DeSean Jackson had said it, it was doubly awful. And my first reaction, honestly, was that there is this strain in some parts of the Black Lives Matter movement. It originates in part from Louis Farrakhan, that is deeply anti-Israel and anti-Semitic. And I was just saddened to see that he said it. I was pretty sure that it came from a real ignorance of the issues and what was involved, because this sounded like something that was repeated foolishly and thoughtlessly. And then when I saw that Stephen Jackson had doubled down on it, I thought, hey, you know, now we've got we're going to have a snowball effect. And so I was very happy when actually one of my congregants said, I know Stephen Jackson, and I think that I could get him to talk to you. Would you be interested? And I said, of course I'd be interested, because I always think that if you have a chance to talk to somebody, then you actually get a chance to find out whether this is a deeply held belief or something that they foolishly repeat without knowledge.
That's huge and a very, I think, important delineation, right? Like, okay, are you just an anti-Semitic, no help,
right?
Nothing matters, this is what you think, and for however you got there, that's, you know, I'm not going to do a deep dive on that, but that's where you are and you're not moving,
right?
Or is this someone that's just flat out ignorant? So what was, and Stephen has posted a million things saying, I have no hate for anyone, but then he also was kind of doubling down on, well, this is the truth. So
right.
What was your conversation with him like, and what were you trying to explain?
So I first wanted him to know that what he said was foolish. The idea, first of all, the Rothschilds control all the banks. It's just, all you have to do is look at who owns the banks. You think the Rothschilds own the banks in China and Japan and India, and also that the Rothschild family hasn't been Jewish for a long time, but that's a separate issue. And actually, just for the purpose of your listeners, I just out of interest, I Googled who is the wealthiest family in the world. It's the Walmart guys, the Waltons. Who are very far from being Jewish. And there are lots of examples like that, but that's not something that I assumed he ever thought about or explored, or he just heard somewhere the Rothschilds control all the banks, and it made sense to blame all the ills of the world on somebody. So I first pointed that out to him, and the most, I think, useful and beneficial part of the entire conversation was when he said, yeah, I realize it's a stereotype, like saying all blacks are gangsters. And I thought, okay, so he's starting to understand that these stereotypes take hold and they do great damage, and they're easy to believe if you don't take the time to actually explore it. And that was really what I was looking for, was, is there a chance here, both for me to listen, because after all, I don't know about his life experience either. It's not like I'm just there to talk. And also to let him know that the Jewish world is very different from his stereotype.
As I'm listening to you talk right now, Rabbi, I can just feel a little pain coming over me. It's painful, like how little we know each other, something along those lines, right? And I also appreciate that. Okay, great. We're having a lot of conversations right now that we haven't had. And I'm looking at myself here, Rabbi, like I grew up in privileged northern suburbs here, and I didn't experience any real anti-Semitism or racism. However, I would always hear comments. It was fairly popular back in, you know, in my college years. You'd walk in and you'd be playing video games and somebody would say something like, "That's a Jew goal," it's not doing any real damage to me, but I also didn't have the courage to say anything. Say, hey, buddy, my good friend who was at my wedding, like, I'm a Jewish guy, and I'd prefer that you did not use that as a term for a cheap goal, you know, but I didn't do it. I just sat back and kind of was like, you know, whatever, no big deal. These things happen, rather than being in the fight. And not even the fight. Right. So what's your reaction to that?
I'm really glad you said that. And I think that that's a perfect, what you just said is the experience of so many people who encounter prejudice, whether against their own group or others, which is it's so much easier not to say anything. And most of us don't. It's really embarrassing to be the person who always speaks up. But part of this was that I think from your own group, and this was part of the dialogue, was he was getting emails saying, don't let that Jew off the hook, you know, don't bow down to him, don't listen to him. Don't apologize to him, you know, stand tall. They are this and they are that. He was getting a lot of those. And I, on the other hand, was getting, he won't tell you the truth. He's really an anti-Semite. Anti-Semitism is all through the black community. Don't let him off the hook. In other words, sometimes it's also from your own side that they won't, that the grip is so tight that they won't give someone else the opportunity to be different, to listen and to learn. And so it's sort of a double, it's like all the human passions come to play here. There's embarrassment, you don't want to speak up when you hear prejudice, and also there's anger that you don't believe that the other person could really be okay, because we other each other a lot. And the only way to change that is through dialogue and through discussion. I thought that's why it was so beautiful when Julian Edelman taped this brief plea to Deshaun Jackson. And he said, you know, when the pandemic is over, if you come with me to the Holocaust Museum, I'll go with you to the African-American Museum in Washington. And so I repeated the same thing to Steven Jackson. I've been to the African-American Museum, but I'm sure it's a different experience to go with somebody whose life is wrapped up in the black experience in America. So if we did that more, if we actually were ready to listen more, it'd be a better place. But right now we're all yelling at each other on Twitter.
Right. And I really appreciate the underlining that he's getting it from his side. You're getting it from your side. And I'm sitting here like, look, Jewish people and black people should really have a pretty good understanding of each other on some level. We don't experience, you know, we can walk around and walk in any store and nobody's going to necessarily know that we're quote unquote Jewish and we're not going to be treated differently. However, you know, there's a lot of similarities there, and that's what's like, there's us, that's what makes it just incredibly disappointing when these two, when Jews and blacks are at each other, it's like, well, hold on a second here. There's a lot of common ground. Can we not see this? Like, are you aware of the Holocaust? Are you aware of my life every single day? Right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff where we can bond, but yet, and I also think that people don't, on both sides, clearly right now, they don't identify their, for lack of a better word, their own racism or their own, you know, their own prejudice that they just want to put on the other person, and they're missing themselves, if that makes sense.
And that's, it makes perfect sense. And that's why I was sure to say to him, Not that I was angry by what he said, but that I was hurt. Because when you're hurt, you don't come from a position of I'm challenging you. When you say to somebody that you're hurt, what you're saying to them is your words have power. So you're not trying to make them powerless. And that's much better than saying I'm angry. Because then you set up an opposition that shouldn't be there. As you say, look, the Jewish people in the lifetime of people who are still alive lost a third of all the Jews in the world. I mean, that's unfathomable. And African Americans have been in the country that enslaved them. It's not like, you know, a Jew can say this happened to us over in Europe. But for an African American, it happened here where you live. And so they're two different kinds of pain, but they're both unfathomable. They're both so deep that, as you say, we ought to be able to reach out over our differences and to say, you know, what you say here hurts me, what he said there hurts me. It's why we put up a banner on our synagogue that said Sinai Temple stands with our African-American brothers and sisters against racism. And I think that it was a part of the reason that he agreed to talk to me was because the congregant said, look, it's not like this guy came to this yesterday. We put this banner up on Juneteenth because we thought it was important for people to know that the Jewish people and black people should understand each other and help each other.
Rabbi, what do you think is the source of this, I don't know if I'll call it lack of understanding or just the whole narrative that the Jews control the banks, they control the media. Like where do you trace that back to, that this narrative has gotten, and I guess that on some level continues to have, you know, a lot of steam here, that this is a true narrative that people believe? I'm trying to trace it back in my mind.
Okay, I can give you three sources. One is a well-known forgery that was written in Russia in the 19th century called The Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which we know the Russian who wrote it, and it talked about how there's this worldwide plot of Jews to control the world. That's one, which, by the way, you and I should be let in on, but nobody ever told us about it, so I'm upset about that.
Right.
There's two is the fact that for a long time, Jews couldn't own property in most of the countries of the world, and so the only thing they could do was trade. And so Jews were always in trade and therefore in capital professions. And three is that there are certain people, purveyors of hate, like Louis Farrakhan, who say this over and over and over again so that people hear it. But I just want to let your listeners know something important, which is hate is because of hate. And I say that because Jews have been hated for being capitalists and they've been hated for being communists. They've been hated for assimilating and they've been hated for staying separate. It's almost like there's nothing that you can't hate people for if you want to hate. But the hate always comes first, not the stereotype.
I'm thinking, too, about as far as like African-American people living in the U.S. And, you know, one of my Jewish friends who lives in Israel, and he's in the hotel industry, and he travels all throughout Europe. And he says the place where he feels the most welcome is Germany. Which I find that very interesting.
Yes.
And you say yes, so you've heard that before, which is, what's your break?
I've had that experience. I've traveled also through Europe, and it's remarkable. Germany has, to a much greater extent than any other country, come to grips with its past. And that's not true. I mean, that's not true in Austria. It's not true in Hungary. It's not true in all these other places where there was the wholesale destruction of Jews. But Germany has really tried. They have mandatory Holocaust education. They really try to come to grips with what happened in their own country.
And I think on some level, as we're having this conversation, it's a pathway for the U.S. as we're trying to figure out, should these statues stay around and what should happen here and what should the education be? And if we really take a look at where we're at today and where we want to go, to me, that seems like part of it.
Yeah, I think that that's absolutely true. How as a country you memorialize your past says an awful lot about your character. And so I think that it's important for Americans to be sort of as one in both the pride of America and also in being honest about what we've done over the past couple hundred of years. I mean, part of what I think makes America great is that we do have the strength to confront our own shortcomings, or we should have that strength. So I believe that these kinds of dialogues and this discussion on your show, that's an important part of it.
Right. And I think it's just very important to underline. We are a great country, a tremendous country. Yes. That's not perfect. And so no one is. Where are you going today? Where are you going tomorrow? How are you looking at it? And you can take out some guilt or whatever, but at some point it's also kind of pointless. Like, what's the next move? How did your time with the Stephen Jackson end, Rabbi, before you have to get on out of here?
Well, so we agreed that when this is over, we will go to Washington together and go to the two museums, and that we'll continue talking. And I think that it was from the reaction was overwhelmingly more than positive. Grateful and positive and so on. And I think that that despite the fact that there will always be people who will prefer anger to reconciliation, I think that it was a very good discussion, and I hope that it continues. And I hope that others will take a cue from this to initiate similar conversations.
Well, I really appreciate you being on today, and it was super uplifting, and I hope that everybody else has the same reaction. Or if not, that's fine, too. We can have that discussion, 312.
Thank you, and let me just say, if they want to see the discussion, it's about 15, 20 minutes. It's on my Instagram, which is David J. Wolpe, or Stephen Jackson's Instagram, which I think is Stack5. But it's on Instagram, or you just Google it, David Wolpe and Stephen Jackson. I'm sure you'll come up with it, because the internet is the repository of all things. And thank you so much for having me today.
Yeah, and if you want to check out the rabbi's temple, it's Sinai Temple, SINAI temple.org, and you can follow him on Facebook as well, Twitter at Rabbi WOLPE. Rabbi, thank you so much, David. I really, really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you. Take care.
720 WGN.